to episode 5 of the Harness Podcast. I'm your host, Dean, and on this episode, we're going to talk about season 3, episode 5, Search and Recovery, which was on TNT last night. So, this episode, where it does is it picks up where episode 4 left off, which is at the end of episode 4, we'd seen that Tom Pope, General Wrestler, and Cochise had actually gone to meet with President Hathaway, and at the end of the episode we see that Dheesh Venny had discovered where the meeting was taking place and had sent their beamers to go and engage with them and to just wipe them out. And at the end of the episode we see that Pope, Tom and Bressler's plane has been hit and it's in a stage of actually sort of crashing at the point. So the episode here, episode 5, picks up where the plane is in flames, it has crashed, Pope is unconscious in the back, Tom is only after coming to, the plane is starting to go on fire, Bressler has been turned into a Bressler kebab and is unconscious and dead. Well, when you're dead, you are unconscious. And then Pope is being taken from the plane by Tom just before it actually explodes, so Tom proving once again to be the better man and has saved Pope from certain death. And meanwhile, back in New Charleston, you know, that should almost come with a transition. Meanwhile, back in New Charleston, Dr. Kadar and Maria Peralta, you know, Tom's VP, played by the amazing Gloria Rubin, woefully underused, I do think, in this role. But anyway, they are sort of engaged and Peralta has gone to Kadar, who seems to be almost like this sort of recluse Sherlock Holmes or go-to guy to help carry plots along, and seems to be almost like this panacea for, like, if there's a difficulty in a plot to keep things moving along, you know, for complexity reasons, you know, throw this guy into the mix and he'll figure it out and do whatever he does in a weird, mysterious way and carry the stories onwards, like we've seen in Collateral Damage, example. So anyway, Peralta has gone to Kadar and she's shown him some pictures of what the Volm are doing, or building, and she's like, okay, smart dude, what I want you to do is I want you to look at these pictures and figure me out what these sons of bitches are up to, and put it all together. And the guy's like, but only some pictures? And she's like, well, you know, if there's anyone who can figure this out, it would be you. You know, just really, really playing it up and hamming it in and dialing in on that thing of, like, Kadar equals moving plots along with the technical stuff. You know, it almost kind of reminds me of Star Trek in one respect, where they would go, oh, well, you know, to solve this particular problem, if you do the thing with the thing and the other thing, and then we're all magically there. And it's like, oh, well, why didn't we think of that in the first place? He's a really, really horrible plot device of a character. And you know what? He is almost like the MacGuffin in one respect. But, yeah, I'm not digging his usage of as a character in this series. In one respect, it feels kind of lazy. But we'll see how this actually goes and pays out. So, while Peralta is actually there with Kadar, Kadar is like, hell, well, I need to talk to you about the alien babies and the fact that that, you know, Anne Glass's baby and Tom's daughter, Alexis, you know, she is a alien. And, yeah, in fact, she's not just an alien, she's a new species of alien and a hybrid. But, you know, Gloria Rubin's Maria Peralta character is like, she's not interested at this point. She's like, yeah, I'll come back when you're just about ready to. But, and meanwhile, and you know, that should almost come with its own transition in itself. Meanwhile, Captain Weaver and Matt and his brother and Weaver's daughter and Smeaghal, yes, that's it. I have decided that I am now, well, Hal is in sort of evil under the influence of Eshveni mode. Or under the influence of Karen mode, should now be called Smeaghal. And on Twitter, I've actually sort of started that, which is hashtag Smeaghal. So check that out if you get a chance and, like, tweet it around the place. So they're all out and they're trying to search for Anne and for Alexis as well, because, you know, they've been told that there's a good possibility that Anne's baby is this alien hybrid and, you know, she's only just doing what any mother would do, which is protecting her child and being confused and run away. And the sort of the search for them and this whole thing that Matt Frow, and yes, I will refer to him as Matt Frow. Matt Frow feels that like he doesn't want to, that he doesn't really remember his mother too much, and Ben has, and he points out to Ben that, you know what, he no longer discusses their birth mother much anymore. And sort of Ben being very stoic, actually, and sort of not pandering to Matt or Matt Frow, and not being too condescending towards him and treating him like a child now that he is growing up, and like being open, honest, and frank with him. While Smeagol is doing his, "Ooh, look at me and my evil look." Drew Roy must be having a lot of fun with that, going, "I am Smeagol." And taking it out for a good old test drive as well. And it comes down to the thing where, you know, you see this relationship. And you know what, this episode, you know what, I say it's pedestrian. You can actually see where there's some sort of interpersonal relationship sort of being resolved or being moved on to the next level. You've got Tom and Pope, and I'll get back to the whole Tom and Pope thing in a second. And then you've sort of got Ben and Matt, and Ben being a little, doing what like really Hal's character should be doing, you know, being the supportive older brother, being the older brother there, lending an ear to lean on. But you know, so you see that sort of thing with Ben and Matt sort of reconnecting and doing all that whole thing, and then you see sort of the importance of like Kedar, and you start seeing sort of that relationship in terms of like that between sort of Kedar and Peralta. That's, calling it a relationship is pretty tenuous at best, but you're starting to see where, you know, the VP is starting to lean on what she sees as an important asset for helping her wade through the piles of cruds that she's having to deal with. And what the other thing you also see here as well is you see the Weaver, where he sort of reinforces, Captain Weaver reinforces the thing of, you know what, the second mass, they've become more than just a group of freedom fighters, that they are actually like a family, and they look at each other as family, and family has each other's backs. So you see this storyline being moved along in that respect. And then you sort of get back to the whole thing of where you've got Tom Mason and you've got Pope, and they are out in the wilds, their plane has crashed, Bressler's dead, and there's sort of this sort of mini power struggle going on between them, of many unresolved issues that have been building up since the Pope character was introduced into the mix, and him trying to find his place, or having found his place, and sort of being like almost anti-establishment within New Charleston, being sort of the owning the bar there and having Hummers and motorcycles, you know, not particularly fuel-friendly things in an environment where they're trying to conserve fuel and use it as best they can for vehicles, especially for trying to preserve the human race and keep what's left of humanity moving forward. But these two characters, and sort of they're having their, it's almost like this sort of back and forth in one respect, which is kind of like an unstoppable force meeting an immovable object. And they're getting chased down by skitters and doing what Pope does best, killing skitters. Because I think the dude lives for like two things. The day when he can get the hell out from under Tom Mason's feet and not have Mason trampling on him and his idea of freedom. And killing skitters. Just rather, rather creepy set of pastimes. So these two guys are having their struggle and they're moving along, but Tom is injured in the process, and they're escaping the skitters. They have this almost, what would I call it? Almost like a cliffhanger moment, I would suggest. Or no, actually more like The Fugitive, you know, jumping off the edge into water to escape the skitters and getting out the other side. And oh, Tom has injured his ankle, and miraculously Pope hasn't been injured at all. Strange that. So Tom's ankle, it's broken or somehow immobile, that he's unable to put any weight in it, and he sort of gets into the whole thing with Pope that, oh, we're even, I'm injured and you have to go on without me. Again, very pedestrian and very mundane in terms of like getting this, but you're sort of, I don't even know if you can say this, Tom and Pope's sort of their tete-a-tete is even anyway near resolved, or whether it's anyway move forward. You know, it kind of feels like we've seen two fighters and they're in a ring and they're kind of, they're at the stage where they're tired and you can the punches are being landed, but you know what, they're not as meaningful, and but neither are stubborn enough to sort of just go, you know what, dude, I've had enough, like, just knock me out and get it over and done with. Just really, really not moving anything forward in any way, shape or form. And you know what, when you get to sort of towards the end of this episode, you know, Tom and Pope arrive back and they literally are holding on to each other and then they just collapse. And I thought that was kind of a bit lazy in terms of the way that they actually just get to that. And then when he wakes up, Weaver tells him that Anne and Lexi are missing. And you know what, the episode just as a whole, it just feels like it's... we're at episode 5, so technically we actually are at the halfway point in the season. So, you know, business should be picking up right now. And it kind of feels like, apart from sort of the opening gambit to this season, the season 1, season 2, or season 3, episode 1 and episode 2 premiere, which was one big giant show, you know, it's been a while since anything of consequence actually happened. And the only thing that you've sort of learned going forward in this is that the weapon or the thing that the Valm are building is not all that it seems, and it just seems to be like moving really, really slowly. And you know what, even for the alien sort of quota in this is quite low, just a couple of minor skitter incidences while Tom and Pope are out in the wood, again very, very alien light. But again, just feels very, very weak. Not much story really happening. Not much else moving on. And you know what? Like, the whole thing about the where the Smeeghal thing is actually going. TNT, you know, yet again. Bravo, you know, just spoiling the story for next week. You know, it's bad enough that when you have pedestrian episodes in the show, that what you do is at the end of an episode, you then spoil one of the interesting storylines where you're just like, come on, could you get on with it? So people next week now already know what's going to happen in one respect. Smeeghal is going to go all Gollum and go after his preciouses. In other words, he's trying to seek information about the Valm weapon that's being built. And you know, I really dislike when people who are TV execs and then they're putting together the details about what they're going to tease for the next episode, where they actually spoil some of the main storylines and some of the more interesting parts of the episode. And it kind of feels like blowing your load early in one respect. And I think that's a really sort of crude analogy to use for it, but it does come across as that. And I just wish that TV execs, when they're actually doing stuff like that, would do things with a little bit more care. I mean, if the show feels weak, as you know, this episode does, and it feels like we're getting into that very lolly type piece in the series with this, I wish they would actually just not do that as a way to try and reinvigorate interest in the series if the numbers are dropping off. It's just really weak, and it's a really lazy thing to do, and I've used that word an awful lot for this episode, lazy, because it does feel kind of lazy. But hopefully from next week's episode, now TNT have actually spoiled it for us in one respect, I'm hoping that, like, in the words of WWE legendary commentator JR, you know, that business will pick up and that we'll sort of start moving along in the proper order towards where it's going to be very sort of action heavy and story heavy and story progression heavy final half of the season. If it doesn't, it's going to be almost like season 3 should maybe never have happened and could be completely forgettable, but hopefully we won't get that. So that's all I've got to talk about for this week when talking about episode 5 from season 3. Remember, if you want to tweet the show, you can tweet it at Harness Podcast. You can actually check it out on iTunes, or you can check it out on Podomatic at harnessed.podomatic.com. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback you want to give about this episode or other episodes, you can send it into harnessed@outlook.com.